all of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, we hope you stay glued to our website, kptz.org. Our website's more than just a way to listen to today's show. For example, you can find the biographies of all our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town, and you can even sample some of our earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as a podcast. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show and then listen to some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who drives that battered Toyota with the skull and crossbones on the hood? I see it all the time at the post office. But the driver can't be all that rebellious. There's a KPTZ sticker on the rear bumper. And what's with the strange bicycles around town? There's one lovely white bicycle decorated with flowers and pink ribbons. It appears to magically change locations to a different corner every week or so. What gives? And just who was that skinny tattooed white guy dancing in front of the band at the blues festival? The singer had indeed suggested that folks dance, but I don't think he had that sort of solo dancing in mind. Jefferson County is full of all sorts of characters. Maybe there should be some sort of personality test to see if you can fit in here at the edge of the continent. This show, Our Town, tries to profile some of the singular personalities who live here. But the show's only half an hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. Our Town is a wide-ranging show where we talk with people who make up the eclectic mix around here. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Kim Rafferty, who's a nurse with Jefferson County Public Health. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thanks, Marianne. Happy to be here. Excited to be here.
So tell me, are you a local girl born and bred in Western Washington?
No, I am not. I hail from Indiana. I'm a Hoosier.
A Hoosier. Okay. How would you describe your high school self? What were you like?
I came from a very large high school. There were 1,400 in my graduating class.
Wow.
So I would say I was the person who was a mixer among all groups. I didn't kind of hang out with one group. I was a good student.
Did you go to university right out of high school?
I did. I did go to university right out of high school. I went on to get my degree in wildlife management at Purdue University.
Had you thought about what you were going to do with that degree?
Well, I had a love of the outdoors, so I thought that I would somehow get a job with some organization that worked with managing natural resources. But after college, I ended up going to the Peace Corps and did a lot of traveling and realized that that field was a little more difficult to find work. And so then I went back and got my nursing degree.
Okay, but wait a minute. You skipped a chapter.
Okay.
You also told me the other day that you took a break during college and you went and did something a lot of people fantasize about. So tell us about that experience.
My partner and I moved out to California and we lived on a commune out there called Sunburst Farms. It was just north of Goleta. It was a community of 350 folks that lived in the community, and it had a huge property that went from the mountains down to the coast. And we were an agriculture community, and we also had 4 natural food stores in Santa Barbara, and we were also a wholesaler of natural foods across the country.
So most communes are led by a charismatic figure. Was that true in your commune?
Yes, that was true. We did have a charismatic figure who was the leader of the community. It had started about 8 years before we arrived there, and it was run by him and then a group of elders, and they did set forth a dogma that everyone was supposed to follow.
What were some of the tenets of this dogma?
Well, they believed in no alcohol, no drugs, chastity, and being close with nature. He also had a very interesting philosophy about folks from outer space. He called them the Nephilim, the bad energy that came in, and he had some pretty way out ideas. But what really drew me to that organization was the communal living and working together for common good, sharing resources, working on the land. I was in my early 20s.
Right, and you were young and idealistic.
Yes, yes.
But why did you decide to leave?
One of the other beliefs this man had was they believed a lot in the Hopi traditions. And needless to say, I'm not an expert in any of that, but they talked a lot about the Hopi corn, the yellow corn, the white corn, the blue corn. And in the community, if you wanted to come together as a couple, you had to get permission from the elders and from the leader. This couple was a black man and a white woman. They were madly in love and they wanted to be together as a couple. And they went forth to the elders and the leader and asked for their permission and their encouragement. And they were told that no, they didn't support that because it went back to this Hopi tradition about keeping the different colors separate. And so the couple decided, let's hang in there and see if we can come at this a different way. And so what they did is they became pregnant and they thought that would help make them be accepted. And then there was this huge community meeting about it. And the fallout of the meeting was, no, the community wasn't going to support this. And that just did not work for me. I felt like, well, I can live like this out in the big community. I don't need to dedicate myself to this here. It was not something that I believed in. So I packed up my bags and left the next day, as did many others.
Yeah. Was it difficult to leave?
No, okay. It was very open. A lot of people left. Okay.
Okay. Did you go back to Indiana as your next step out of the commune?
Yes, we did go back to Indiana. We had taken a break from college, so
right.
We went back to finish, and then after college, we went into the Peace Corps.
And where'd you go in the Peace Corps?
I was a volunteer in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. And what exact sort of work did you do there?
I was in fisheries management, so I worked with the local Bureau of Fisheries and helped design and develop a fish hatchery for tilapia, which is a fish that does really well in low oxygen environment and in fresh water. So I worked with that. And then I also worked a lot with the governor's task force on appropriate technology and worked with women and high school students in building Lorena stoves, which are stoves, really low technology stoves that are made out of clay and dirt. You make a big box and you dig out the firebox and channels for the smoke and the holes for the pots. And it cuts down on your use of fuel. It helps with decreasing burns for women and children. There were a lot of burns because they cooked on open fires, mm-hmm. and it reduced the smoke that people were exposed to.
Did you already have your nursing degree at that point?
No, at that point I had a degree in wildlife management.
Okay, so that correct. Makes sense with the fisheries stuff.
Right.
So did some of your experiences in the Philippines contribute to your desire to become a nurse?
It did, and just traveling around the world. We lived in a very poor rural community, and a lot of our neighbors didn't really have access to health care. I remember one gentleman coming over, and the tips of his fingers were just black, and
ew.
He was in pain, and he was a heavy smoker, and he had no access to health care. So we took him with us to the physician that we had access to as Peace Corps volunteers, and the guy had a circulation problem where he was having no circulation to the tips of his fingers, and the doctor helped him. But the doctor told us, you know, I'm not the person for him to come to. He should use the local clinics, which there were very few of them, and they were not very accessible.
Yeah, barely exist.
Yeah.
Wow. So originally, you hadn't thought of being a nurse. That wasn't for you.
I had not, no.
And then you went back and enrolled in nursing school, I guess. Where were you going?
Yeah, well, after the Peace Corps, my husband at the time decided to go back to Indianapolis and work for the family business. That was in the mid-80s, and I had a difficult time finding a job in my field unless right. I wanted to travel for hours, which I didn't really want to do. So at that point, I determined that I needed to go get a degree in something that I could get a job no matter where I was.
Yeah.
And that was nursing. I love science, so it was a good fit for me.
Yeah, that sounds good. And where did you get the nursing degree?
At Indiana University.
I see. Were you for a while a nurse in Indiana?
I was never a nurse in Indiana.
Okay.
I got my degree, and then we immediately moved out to Washington State.
What drew you to Washington State?
My husband at the time was getting his master's in horticulture, so we moved out to Pullman, where he was working.
Did you start your nursing career then in that area?
I did. I worked for a short time in home health, and then he made some changes in what he wanted to do, and then we ended up in the Puget Sound area out on Guemes Island.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. How many people were out there at that point in time?
On Guemes Island? Gosh, it was really small. I think at that point, maybe year-round population, they had 800 people.
What sort of nursing were you doing there?
Well, there, by that time, I had a daughter, and we were sort of in transition, so I didn't work there while we lived on Guemes. We were in transition, and eventually I found a job on Orcas Island, and that's where we ended up moving to and living.
You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. The show's called Our Town, and I'm your host, Maryam McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the unique individuals who make up the fabric of the community on the Olympic Peninsula. Today, my guest is Kim Rafferty, who's a nurse for Jefferson County Public Health. Kim was just telling us first about her youthful days when she and her husband spent a year in a commune in California, but it was not quite what they expected in the long run. They decided to leave, went back to Indiana for a while, but ultimately found themselves out here on the Olympic Peninsula. So after you had a baby and a little while on Guemes Island, but you ended up on Orcas Island. So what was that all about?
Well, that was really a wonderful experience. I was the nurse in the clinic on Orcas Island, a rural clinic, when we, you know, were a primary care facility, and we were the only healthcare option on the island. So we did a little bit of everything. We did primary care. We had emergency component. The nurses did x-ray and lab.
Were there any doctors?
Yeah, we had two doctors. One doctor who was there about 4 days a week, and one doctor who commuted over from Waldron Island.
Okay. What happens in a situation like that where you're in a remote spot and something fairly substantial happens and requires hospitalization, intensive care, and all of that? What's the procedure? What happens?
Well, we had a great EMS system out there, so we worked closely with them, and they would either bring them into the clinic and we would stabilize them, and then they would either fly them off, generally over to Anacortes, or sometimes they would have to get on the ferry. I remember one day we were closed. I think it was a holiday, and for some reason I had gone into the clinic to check on something, and we had a family come in with a brand new baby they had just had, and the baby, something just wasn't right with the baby. I certainly wasn't the expert, but I could tell something wasn't right. I called our doctor, who was not really available, and eventually what we ended up doing was getting a hold of the EMS, and we got the family out of there ASAP to get the baby over to the hospital.
Do they do helicopter service in there?
They do helicopter service in there. They did.
Yeah, well, I can see that you might need that in a situation like that.
Right.
Hopefully the baby made it.
The baby did make it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I was there up until the clinic went through a big change, and it grew into a much larger facility and came under the management of the hospital in Anacortes. So it's a much different situation over there now.
So how long were you there?
I was on Orcas about 6 to 8 years.
And what was the next step?
The next step was I had to go back to Indiana for a year to take care of some family business. I did that as a single mom with my daughter. And then after that was taken care of, I moved to Port Townsend, Washington.
Okay, here's the multi-million-dollar question. Why Port Townsend?
Well, it was between Port Townsend and Taos, New Mexico. This was in the 90s, early 90s. In my research, I found that the economy was a little better in Port Townsend, and also my connections were out here because I still had a lot of friends on Orcas. I had visited Port Townsend while I lived on Guemes and fell in love. We went to the county fair. I come from Indiana, where we have this great, huge state fair, but the county fair was so fun, and so charming. I just fell in love with the whole place. And of course, we went downtown and went to Waterfront Pizza. And I just thought, wow, this is a great place.
Well, now let's talk about Taos, New Mexico for a moment. Had you actually been there?
I had never been there.
Ah, so it was more just sort of an idea.
It was just an idea, yeah.
But Port Townsend, you had been there. You knew some people. And okay, so you moved to Port Townsend. Now, did you already have a job here, or did you show up and then start looking?
I did have a job. While I was working in Indiana, I was not an internet user. It was not the go-to way of functioning. So I was getting the newspaper, checking out jobs, and found a job, which was the health coordinator for the Head Start ECAP program. I applied for that and was lucky enough to get that job. So my daughter and I packed up and moved out here.
Was she already in school?
She was just starting first grade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a lot of people say that Port Townsend is a good place to raise your kids.
It absolutely has been a wonderful place to raise kids.
In the Head Start program in those days, how many children were you dealing with?
Wow. Well, I don't know that I can give you numbers, but at that point, the Head Start ECAP program served kids out in Forks, Clallam Bay. We had two programs in Port Angeles, one in Squim. We had a program in Brennan, Quilcene, Chimicum, and Port Townsend. So I went all over the peninsula.
What does ECAP stand for?
Early Childhood Education Program. Okay. It's a state equivalent of Head Start.
Okay. Not everyone's familiar with the initials. Those in the health field, of course, would be. But that involved you traveling around Jefferson County and the whole peninsula, I guess.
It did. It was a wonderful way to get to know the Olympic Peninsula and all the different communities, which are so different.
Yeah, they really are. What did you do next? You did that for a few years?
I think I worked for the Head Start ECAP program for about 7 to 8 years, yeah. And then after that, an opportunity came up for me to do something that I had wanted to do for a long time, which was to open an adult family home for seniors who have dementia.
Wow, that must be a big responsibility and hard work.
It was really rewarding. I loved every minute of it. I loved working with our clients that we had. We had a great staff, and the families that we worked with were really wonderful, and I learned a heck of a lot.
I'm sure you would. Now, did you live in this home or live nearby?
No, I was remarried to my husband, and he owned the house behind my house, so we moved into my house and turned his house into the adult family home. We were licensed for 6 people. We were a dementia specialty adult family home.
Okay, and you did that for a number of years, I guess.
I did. Yeah, we did that about, I guess, 8 is my number.
Yeah, so 8's your number.
Must be 8 years I did that while we raised our children. When I opened the adult family home, there were several other adult family homes and only life care. So there wasn't, Seaport Landing wasn't in existence, and Victoria Place wasn't in existence, and San Juan Villa. There were not so many beds in our community as there are now. So we provided a great service, and it was all private pay because most people didn't have long-term care insurance. So once all those big facilities opened and our kids were raised and were going off to college, I kind of looked at the numbers and thought this might be a nice time to
transition out
of that.
What did you end up doing next?
I sold the business.
Right.
And then I kind of went on an odd divergent path. I became partners with a friend of mine, and we opened a store downtown called Monsoon that was dedicated to fostering fair trade and sustainability. All of our products we sold were either made by fair trade organizations or in some kind of sustainable way.
But that's a store that sort of came and went, right?
It did. We lasted 5 years.
Not 8.
Not 8. And it was a great experience. I learned a lot. And I learned that, hey, I have a lot of respect for people doing retail because it's not easy.
No.
It is not easy.
Yeah. So we decided, I think, to go back to nursing, right?
Yes, that's exactly what I decided to do. That is so much easier than retail.
Okay. Which nursing job did you do next?
I was so fortunate because when I had the adult family home, we had a nurse named Myrtle Corey who was doing the foot care program for Jefferson County Public Health. She would come to our adult family home and provide foot care for our clients. And I just thought, what a wonderful service. And I thought to myself, if there's ever a time I need a job, I hope I can, you know,
get one of those.
Do something like that. Yeah. And just one of those fateful things, timing was right. I ran into Myrtle and said, hey, if you ever need help with the program. And she said, well, you know, I'm getting ready to retire, so maybe that can work out. And unfortunately, they had just hired a nurse to do the job. But then that nurse, I think she hurt herself and couldn't do the job. And so then the job was open. And I talked to the supervisor and said, I'm interested in the position if it's available. And she said, really? Great. Sign up. That was 7 years ago. And
eight isn't coming up soon.
We're coming up to eight. No. And it's the greatest job ever. I love it.
Most of our listeners probably don't know a lot about Jefferson County Public Health. Could you just give us an idea of the scope, maybe a little beyond the foot care, the whole thing, and then we'll talk more about foot care.
Right. So Jefferson County Public Health has three departments. They have community health, environmental health, and human services. So the foot care program falls under the community health department. And under that department, the services that are provided are chronic disease prevention, family planning, well women care and preventative health, STI testing and treatment, immunizations, and they also provide the school-based health clinics. And also communicable disease prevention and immunizations. I don't know if I said that before. Then under human services, that's where our developmental disability services are covered, and also accessible community services through the human service department. And then environmental health covers community safety, drinking water and wells, emergency preparedness and food safety, and septic systems and water quality. So it's a broad range of services.
Yeah. Yeah. That's quite a lot. Well, in the foot care area, can you give us the scope of that? First of all, I think you told me that Myrtle in her career saw some staggering number of toes. What was that number again?
Yeah. At her retirement gathering, someone had figured out that over her time, which she had provided the service for 27 years, and she had seen 800,000 or cared for 800,000 toes.
Wow. Amazing.
That's a lot. Yeah.
And so, yes, it is. So I don't know how to break it down for you. How many clients might you see in a year, I guess?
Well, in a year, we see about 2,000. And in a day, a full day of clinic is 15 to 18 people a day.
Wow. You move all around the region, right?
Where are the clinics? I travel all over. We'd have a clinic in Brennan and Quilcean, out at the Tri-Area weekly, and in Port Townsend weekly. I also go to some of the facilities in town, Seaport Landing, Victoria Place, Discovery View Apartments, and San Juan Villa. And we also do home visits for people who cannot get out of their home for whatever reason. We do home visits.
Right. I just want to throw in here that it is a fee-for-service.
It is.
It's $25 normally, but obviously there are some people who are on assistance or whatever. But you look at people's feet. Sometimes you might see things other than just long toenails. What can you give us an example or
right.
two?
The program's really about foot care. So that's taking care of your thick nails, corns, and calluses, helping people figure out what kind of adjustments they can make with pads or shoes or insoles so that they don't have those issues. But the other really important piece, I believe, about foot care is just it's another set of eyes on folks. Not everyone has a great connection with their primary care provider or with our health care system. So there have been times where I've had someone sitting in my chair that I will say to them, I'm concerned about XYZ. I think you need to go see your provider. So for example, I had a gentleman come into the clinic who I'd never seen before. He was a new patient and he had a roaring infection in his leg. He had had an accident with a lawnmower. For some reason, he didn't really notice or seem to know that this is something he should really get attention immediately. So I told him to go immediately to the emergency room, which thank goodness he did. And I'm sure it saved his leg, and I think it probably saved his life.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the other values of foot care. And also, oftentimes, I'm in a position to help seniors find resources for other needs that they have, whether it's connecting them to other services. Like the other day, I connected a family with the services for the blind, the Washington State Services for the Blind, or if it's helping people figure out about getting caregivers in their home. We coordinate with home health. The primary care physicians are really good at referring to us also.
It's primarily seniors that you see.
It is primarily seniors that we see, but we see anyone with any kind of disability.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Or any kind of problem. If they can't get to their feet, or if they're diabetic, or if they have neuropathy, then that's what we do. We're providing some routine foot care that we can't really get with your provider. Insurance doesn't cover it unless you're diabetic. We are fee for service. As you said earlier, we do a sliding fee scale. So if you can't really afford it, we come up with a price that's probably something that will work for you. And we give you a receipt that's considered a medical expense.
Right.
So you do have that.
Now, Kim, we're unfortunately really running short on time here, but I wanted you to mention you're still involved with the Olympic Neighbors program.
Yes, I am. That Olympic Neighbors is a nonprofit that has as their mission fostering home and community for people with developmental disabilities. And I got involved because I have a son who has a developmental disability who has been raised here in Port Townsend. So Olympic Neighbors has opened up an adult family home, which provides home and care for 6 people with developmental disabilities. And we are the only adult family home in Jefferson County. And there's only one other adult family home for people with developmental disabilities, and that's Clear Out in Forks.
Wow.
The need is high, so we're hoping to move beyond this adult family home and provide other sorts of supported housing for folks with developmental disabilities.
Yeah,
that's where we're starting.
Okay. I want to thank you for being on the show. You've been listening to KPTZ Port Townsend. Our town's the name of the show. I'm your host, Mary Ann McNellis. Today, I've been talking with Kim Rafferty, who's the nurse who runs the Senior Foot Clinic for Jefferson County Public Health. She does an immense service for Jefferson County. Not only does she provide much-needed foot care for seniors or whoever who cannot really take care of trimming their toenails anymore, she also visits some shut-ins at home and chats with them. Sometimes she uncovers sad and lonely people who as much need her conversation as her medical attention. On behalf of KPTZ and the community, I'd like to thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
And on a different level of thanks, I'd like to thank my partner, John McPherson. He's the editor and producer of Our Town. He makes me and my guests sound so much better, clear, and eloquent. And thanks to our program director, Larry Stein, chair, Robert Ambrose, and station manager, Kate Ingram. Their dedication makes this a great community resource. And thanks to you, the listener, KPTZ is a community station, totally staffed and run by volunteers. It exists because of you, listener. We need your support, both as volunteers and financial backers. We have no government funding or grants. We're community supported, so get out your checkbook or go online and donate. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Mary Ann McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.